Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower. Now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hey, welcome to Weird House Cinema Rewind. This is Rob Lamb.
And this is Joe McCormick. And Rob and I are out on holiday break this week, but we've got a great classic episode for you. This is our episode on Morozko, aka Jack Frost, the Russo-Finnish fairy tale from another universe. It's what can I even say? I'm speechless. You're gonna love it.
Yeah, it's a magical film that I think people of all times and ages can really get into. It has become, for my family, our Thanksgiving viewing tradition. And so this is the Weird House Cinema episode where we discuss the film. And this was a lot of fun. And I remember I really enjoyed hearing after the fact from folks who grew up with this movie, either within the Mystery Science Theater 3000 tradition or outside of that tradition, watching it on TV in Europe or being familiar with it due to family history. So we heard from a number of people regarding this film, and it was a delightful experience.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Weird House Cinema. This is Rob Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
And this is going to be, I think this is going to be the last new episode of Weird House Cinema for the year before we return in the new year. And it's pretty exciting because we essentially have one last holiday selection here. It's one that is near and dear to my heart, I can safely say at this point. It's my esteem for this film has built up over the years, over the decades, and I feel like I'm at a level of just maximum appreciation for it now.
Christmas with the Cranks.
No. No, we're going to be talking about the 1960s Russian fairy tale spectacular Morozko, better known to many fans in the West as Jack Frost. I think it's sometimes called Frosty or Father Frost. You might recall our mention of this film in past episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind that touch on things like mushroom culture and Russian folklore.
Now, I did not know that it was called Frosty, but that would make sense because immediately I think of how some people, I don't do this, by the way, but some people who get the Frosties at Wendy's dip the French fries in them. And this movie is very much like that. It is like a salty fried potato product dipped into something sweet and cold on the tongue. it is a mashup of different kinds of fairy tale flavors and genres. It is a scattergun blast of weird magical elements of folklore.
Now, of course, if you grew up in the United States, particularly during the 1990s, then your introduction to this film, I think, was likely through Mystery Science Theater 3000, episode 813, which aired in 1997. This was a riff of this film. But if you grew up in Russia or in parts of Eastern Europe, then this movie was likely far more than a weird oddity for your amusement. This may have been your holiday viewing tradition, either around Christmas or New Year's. In fact, in the late 90s, I remember, so this would have been not too long after it actually, the MST episode actually aired, I instantly loved it. I couldn't necessarily, you know, explain why I loved it. And that's one I think the beauties about Mystery Science Theater 3000 is, like I've said before, I feel like it kind of showed many of us that these sorts of films existed and taught us at least some ways of appreciating them. But anyway, I really liked the episode, and I was hanging out with a friend from high school and a foreign exchange student from the Czech Republic, who was staying with that friend at the time. And for some reason, I either described this episode to them, or perhaps I actually showed them part of the episode, like I put it on a VHS tape or something. And Marketa, the student, told me, instantly recognized it and said, oh, this is the film we watch every year. This is our Christmas tradition. They show it on TV every Christmas, and it's just an essential part of the holiday, you know, as Christmassy as the baby Jesus lowering gifts from heaven on a golden string.
Now, on one hand, that is very strange to me because I, like you, first encountered this on Mystery Science Theater where I, you know, the mindset I was in when I first saw it was what a, you know, strange mushroom to find in the forest. Like it was just this bizarre oddity from out of the 19th dimension. But now seeing it again, especially without the Mystery Science Theater, just watching the movie on its own, it has the same kind of weird texture as a lot of Christmas classics that we did grow up with, like I don't know, like the stop motion Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and things like that. Except more earthy. I mean, this feels more rooted in real folklore and archetypes and imagery that goes way back.
Yeah, this film is not one of those films where you're like, okay, I guess I need to research my Russian history or my Russian folklore before I watch this so I'll know what's going on. No, you, all that is great and helps you appreciate it more. But all of this like speaks on a level that I feel like most viewers, especially the sort of intended viewer, the child, either the actual child or the child at heart, will instantly get what's going on throughout most of this film. And in case in point, this film has been a viewing, the MST version of this has been a ritual of my wife and I's for many years now. We watch it every Thanksgiving. Last Thanksgiving, I believe we introduced my son to it, and he was like, okay, this is interesting. And this year he said, I said, hey, do you guys want to watch Jack Frost? And he said, yeah, but I think we should watch it, quote, without all the jokes. So he wanted it unriffed. And so I was delighted to try, because I'd been wanting to try that out as well, because I knew at this point that you know, the grubby visual film grade that we have in the MST episodes is not a proper reflection of the film. So I really wanted to watch a high-definition version of it anyway. And so we watched it, and it was an absolute delight. Everybody enjoyed it. He loved it. Nothing against the MST version. I think it's a lot of fun, but if that is the only version of Morosco you've watched, then you're missing out on just so many extra dimensional colors.
I think you're entirely correct. I don't remember when we had this conversation, but you were telling me this some time a ways back. And so I finally watched it in a higher definition transfer. And this movie is beautiful. It's colorful. A lot of the locations are gorgeous. They picked really wonderful wilderness settings, especially in the first half of the movie that takes place in the spring or summer, I guess. And so there are these hills and forests and caves and meadows and the colors of the costumes just pop. It's really wonderful.
Yeah, it's like it just transforms the film in so many ways to watch it in this full, colorful version. For starters, like if you have, especially to Western viewers, you have these scenes of, people in babushkas, wandering about in the woods. If you have drab colors, that takes on a drab quality. But when it is so bright and so beautiful and the babushkas are so, vibrantly decorated, it paints an entirely different picture. texture of like rural living. It actually allows you to taste the folkloric ideal that's clearly this film is celebrating.
You know, it's funny. I mentioned the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer thing. I just looked it up, and it came out apparently the same year as
oh,
Willow's Co., both 1964 films.
Okay, yeah. And it is weird with Morosco. I've seen different dates for it. Like, sometimes I see 1964, sometimes I see 65. But at any rate, that is the time period, mid-1960s, that it merges. So, yeah, this is essentially a big-budget folklore spectacular for children, for the whole family, and it has everything. It has the personification of winter. It has the evil witch Baba Yaga and her chicken-footed house. You have these troll-like bandits milling about. You have magical animals. You have mushroom spirits, arranged marriages, folkloric logic, and just much, much more.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of an elevator pitch for this movie, the best thing I could come up with is looking for a change in life, consider wandering into the Russian folkloric wilderness and see what happens.
The other way I'd frame it is always be polite to magical old people you meet in the woods.
Absolutely. I mean, that's just universal.
All right, maybe we need to hit some trailer audio.
All right, who's playing hide and seek with me now?
You?
Yes.
Are you a sorcerer, Granddaddy?
I dabble in sorcery a little, but the truth is that I get bored.
You get bored?
I get bored. Come on, play with me. Let's play hide and seek together.
With you? Play hide and seek?
Yes.
You're joking. I catch you in no time.
Think so?
Yes, I think so.
If you catch me, I'll give you a well-bent bow and some nice straight arrows. Is that a bargain?
It's a bargain, Father Mushroom.
Okay, just kidding. That wasn't the trailer, because apparently we don't know if there is a trailer that has any like English narration, but I think there's a trailer at least with some singing.
Yeah. And it's possible I'm missing something, because I did find trailers with English language for other films from this particular director, who we'll get to in a bit. Now, before we get to the connections, we do want to talk just a little bit about folktales and Russian folktales and the Russian folktale that is at the center of all of this. But before we do so, I wanted to just mention a few quick points that are actually from our episode on the Leshy from last year that concerns Russian folklore. These were points made by Jack V. Haney in the excellent book or series of books, An Anthology of Russian Folk Tales. So first of all, he contends that more folk tales may have emerged from the Russian people than any other, due in part to the fact that rural oral traditions lasted well into the 20th century. He also says that Russia has the second largest number of tale types, according to the International Classification System. And within these tales, you'll find lots of animal stories. Frequent villains include Baba Yaga, witches, nasty dwarves, shape-shifting magicians. However, Baba Yaga is also sometimes a donor or a helper. So, you know, sometimes she's a villain. Sometimes I guess she's kind of an anti-hero or something. Somebody that begrudgingly helps our hero out. And that's good to keep in mind in this film, because she's kind of both at times. Frequent characters in general, you've got Baba Yaga and her hut, the Firebird, Kostya the Deathless, Ivan, different versions of Ivan pop up. And this is key, the hero frequently wanders through the woods at some point and receives help in his quest from an animal or some sort of supernatural aid.
Now, the movie, Morozko or Jack Frost, actually seems to smash together a number of different fairy tale archetypes. But I would say that the core of the story, the core situation and backbone, is based on a classic Russian fairy tale known as Morozko or Father Frost, which appeared in printed folktale collections going back at least as far as the 19th century, maybe before then. And it appears to be a variant of an extremely widespread folktale archetype, the essence of which is that there are two girls, two sisters or stepsisters, a kind one who is rewarded and a wicked one who is punished. Now, I thought it would be great to actually just to read through a version of the Father Frost fairy tale. And this is the version collected by the Scottish poet and anthropologist Andrew Lang in the 19th century. So, Robert, are you game to read this folktale with me and then see how it relates to the movie?
Let's do it.
So this is Andrew Lang's rendition of The Story of King Frost. There once upon a time was a peasant woman who had a daughter and a stepdaughter. The daughter had her own way in everything, and whatever she did was right in her mother's eyes. But the poor stepdaughter had a hard time. Let her do what she would, she was always blamed, and got small thanks for all the trouble she took. Nothing was right, everything wrong, and yet, if the truth were known, the girl was worth her weight in gold. She was so unselfish and good-hearted. But her stepmother did not like her, and the poor girl's days were spent in weeping, for it was impossible to live peacefully with the woman. The wicked shrew was determined to get rid of the girl by fair means or foul, and kept saying to her father, "Send her away, old man, send her away, anywhere so that my eyes shan't be plagued any longer by the sight of her, or my ears tormented by the sound of her voice. Send her out into the fields and let the cutting frost do for her." In vain did the poor old father weep and implore her pity. She was firm, and he dared not gainsay her. So he placed his daughter in a sledge, not even daring to give her a horsecloth to keep herself warm with, and drove her out into the bare open fields, where he kissed her and left her, driving home as fast as he could that he might not witness her miserable death. Deserted by her father, the poor girl sat down under a fir tree at the edge of the forest and began to weep silently. Suddenly, she heard a faint sound. It was King Frost springing from tree to tree and cracking his fingers as he went. At length, he reached the fir tree beneath which she was sitting, and with a crisp, crackling sound, he alighted beside her and looked at her lovely face. "Well, maiden," he snapped out, "do you know who I am? I am King Frost, King of the Red Noses."
"All hail to you, great king," answered the girl in a gentle, trembling voice. "Have you come to take me away?"
"Are you warm, maiden?" he replied.
"Quite warm, King Frost," she answered, though she shivered as she spoke.
Then King Frost stooped down and bent over the girl, and the crackling sound grew louder, and the air seemed to be full of knives and darts. And again he asked, "Maiden, are you warm? Are you warm, beautiful girl?"
And though her breath was almost frozen on her lips, she whispered gently, "Quite warm, King Frost."
Then King Frost gnashed his teeth and cracked his fingers, and his eyes sparkled, and the crackling, crisp sound was louder than ever, and for the last time he asked her, "Maiden, are you still warm? Are you still warm, little love?"
And the poor girl was so stiff and numb that she could just gasp, "Still warm, O King."
Now her gentle, courteous words and her uncomplaining ways touched King Frost, and he had pity on her, and he wrapped her up in furs and covered her with blankets, and he fetched a great box in which were beautiful jewels and a rich robe embroidered in gold and silver, and she put it on and looked more lovely than ever, and King Frost stepped with her into his sledge with six white horses. Okay, here we got intermission on the folktale. So it seems like not complaining about being cold worked out really good for her.
Mm-hmm. Yep, she was humble.
Right. I think the point is supposed to be that she's like, she's so kind and polite that she won't even complain about the cold. Maybe because it would be like she's out in his domain and it would be like, you know, offensive to complain about the cold to Grandfather Frost when you're out in, it's kind of like going to somebody's house and saying it smells bad.
Yeah.
That's the way I made sense of it, because otherwise I don't really know what it is that's so kind about saying you're warm when you're not. I think it's that she's in his house.
Right. In the meantime, the wicked stepmother was waiting at home for news of the girl's death and preparing pancakes for the funeral feast. And she said to her husband, "Old man, you had better go out into the fields and find your daughter's body and bury her." Just as the old man was leaving the house, the little dog under the table began to bark, saying...
I don't know how to do a dog voice. Okay, here.
The hell you do. You know how to do a dog voice.
Wait, do I do a Scooby-Doo voice here?
Yeah, that's what I'm
doing. Your daughter shall live to be your delight. Her daughter shall die this very night.
Hold your tongue, you foolish beast, scolded the woman. There's a pancake for you, but you must say,
Her daughter shall have much silver and gold. His daughter is frozen quite stiff and cold.
But the doggy ate up the pancake and barked, saying,
His daughter shall wear a crown on her head. Her daughter shall die unwooed, unwed.
And then old woman tried to coax the doggy with more pancakes and to terrify it with blows, but he barked on, always repeating the same words. And suddenly the door creaked and flew open, and a great heavy chest was pushed in, and behind it came the stepdaughter, radiant and beautiful, in a dress all glittering with silver and gold. For a moment the stepmother's eyes were dazzled, then she called to her husband, Old man, yoke the horses at once into the sledge, and take my daughter into the same field, and leave her on the same spot exactly. And so the old man took the girl and left her beneath the same tree where he had parted from his daughter. In a few minutes, King Frost came past, and looking at the girl, he said,
Are you warm, maiden?
What a blind old fool you must be to ask such a question, she answered angrily. Can't you see that my hands and my feet are nearly frozen?
Then King Frost sprang to and fro in front of her, questioning her and getting only rude, rough words in reply, till at last he got very angry and cracked his fingers and gnashed his teeth and froze her to death. But in the hut, her mother was waiting for her to return, and as she grew impatient, she said to her husband,
Get out the horses, old man, and go and fetch her home, and see that you are careful not to upset the sledge and lose the chest.
Is the mother becoming Irish? I think.
Yeah, she might be. She might be. I mean, as we'll discuss, like it's impossible to read these lines without thinking of the actors in this movie, and particularly the English dub of those characters. And and then I'm also drifting in my accent here.
Oh, okay. So we got a couple more lines. So the dog beneath the table began to bark, saying,
Your daughter is frozen quite stiff and cold, and never shall have a chest full of gold.
Don't tell such wicked lies, scolded the woman. There's a cake for you. Now say, her daughter shall marry a mighty king.
But at that moment, the door flew open, and she rushed out to meet her daughter, and as she took her frozen body in her arms, she too was chilled to death. And that's the end. Man, these old fairy tales are so mean.
this is often the case. Yeah, the old tales didn't play around. They were often rather brutal in ways that you might expect a film adaptation to then soften things a bit and maybe not go so hard on people, especially if they're not, you know, doing anything particularly evil. But even if they are, like Frost is just going around just murdering everyone. How are the children going to connect with that?
Right. So the skeleton of this folktale absolutely appears in the movie. But yeah, like you say, the edges are dulled a little bit. So the spoiled mean daughter is not frozen to death along with her mother. Instead, she's just sort of made a fool of.
Yeah. And generally, there's just now that we've read through the story, like I admire the script even more because they found great ways to soften the thorniness of the story. Like instead of the old man being like, well, I better do what she says and abandoning his daughter to die in the cold, they do an alteration on that where he is going to do that. He's driving her out into the wilderness to abandon her, but then he has a change of heart and says, nope, I'm going to go back and give her a piece of my mind. But Nastenka is so good. She's so good. She can't see her father go back and watch the stepmother unleash hell on him for disobeying her. So she slips off and goes out into the wilderness to die on her own.
Right. She decides she's going to freeze to death in the woods because she doesn't want to make trouble.
Right.
I would say, by the way, you know, I'm a sucker for stories that have a moral about being kind and stuff, but that's a little too kind. I mean, I think it's okay. I think it's okay to not want to freeze to death, even if that's going to create some headaches for your dad.
Yeah, but like you say, the skeleton of the story is there, but then other elements are added in to give it, you know, that sort of that epic full motion picture feel. Baba Yaga is thrown in because she's a delightful villain. You have a male hero thrown in the form of Yvonne. You have various other hijinks going on, a little bit of a Sleeping Beauty trope thrown in as well.
Oh, yeah, Morozko's got it all.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today. Health Aid kombucha.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. All right, well, we'll come back to the plot here in just a minute, but let's take a moment to discuss the various people involved in this. Because you, like me, may not be familiar with any of the people that were involved in the making of Morosco. I've been watching them for years, but I didn't really know anything about them, and it was really fun to research this a little bit the other day.
Okay.
So the director of this film is Alexander Rowe. That's often spelled R-O-U in English, but you also see it spelled R-O-W-E. So he was born in 1906, died in 1973, legendary Soviet filmmaker of Irish and Greek heritage. So his father was an Irish engineer working in Russia. Apparently, I think there's some story about the father ended up like leaving the family in Russia. At any rate, Alexander grew up, you know, as a Russian, and then working his way into what would become the Gorky Film Studio and just becoming a mainstay there. He directed 20 fantasy films, mostly based on Russian folklore and Russian literature, and also some non-fantasy films thrown in there as well. But this was his thing. Such a rich well to draw from. His films include such notable works as Wish Upon a Pike from 1938. This one features Tsar Gorok and The Princess Who Never Smiled. There's Vasilisa the Beautiful from 1940. This has the Baba Yaga in it as well as the Frog Princess. There's The Humpbacked Horse, a 1941 film that has Yvonne in it. There's Kashe the Immortal, a 1945 film that has Kashe the Immortal. There's Fire, Water, and Brass Pipes from 1968 that has Kashe, Baba Yaga, Voryanyo, the Water Spirit, as well as apparently some werewolves. Mm. There's Barber the Fair with the Silken Hair from 1970, which has the Underwater King or the Underwater Czar in it, being known as Chudo Yudo. And then there is The Golden Horns from 1973, which was, I believe, his last film. I think another director had to complete it for him. But that is a film centered around the Baba Yaga as well.
Well, it is no surprise at all that this filmmaker has a long-running affair of the heart with The Witch of the Woods, because the Baba Yaga in this movie is wonderfully realized. She lives in a house that walks around on legs, and all of her scenes are just pitch perfect.
Yeah, all of these films feature similar folkloric threads, because, for example, Baba Yaga pops up in four of them. Ivan is in two of them. Kosciuszko is in two of them. And some of the same actors pop up in several of his films, as we'll discuss. So basically the deal seems to be that Rowe popularized the epic folkloric fantasy film in Russia and set a standard that was certainly emulated by other directors of the time period, but is also still reflected to this day in Russian cinema, including the films of the Walt Disney Company CIS, which produced the live-action Russian fantasy films The Book of Masters in 2009 and The Lost Warrior trilogy from 2017 through, I believe, the third film in that saga is coming out in 2022. These are films that feature most of the characters that I just highlighted. So, just a modern retelling of these various folkloric stories with modern cinematic tools and styles.
I got to say, I've never heard of any of these.
I have not seen any of them, but now I would like to check out some of them. I looked at some trailers and some clips. And I'm impressed. I mean, apparently you have the likes of Steven Spielberg, who has spoken admirably about Rowe in the past. So for those who know, this guy was a master. Now, as far as the screenwriters go, there are two credited screenwriters. The first one is Nikolai Erdman, who lived 1900 through 1970, a Russian playwright and screenwriter, perhaps best known for 1928's The Suicide. This is a play, and he turned to cinema when his playwriting career ran afoul of Soviet authorities. And then there's Mikhail Volpin, who lived 1902 through 1988, a Russian screenwriter who frequently worked with Erdman. Together, they also wrote Rose, Fire, Water, and Brass Pipes. Volpin also wrote the 1961 animated film The Key, which apparently ran afoul of Soviet censors due to its criticism of social conformity.
Mm.
All right, now on to the cast. Let's start at the top with the actor who plays Morozko, who plays Father Frost. This is Alexander Kivyalya, who lived 1905 through 1976. A Russian actor of stage and screen, he worked with Rowe in several different films, including Golden Horns and Fire, Water, and Brass Pipes, as well as the really interesting-sounding Rowe film titled Kingdom of Crooked Mirrors, which apparently involves a mirror world and crooked mirrors that brainwash people through these various subtle changes in reality.
Mm.
I may have to look that one up. He was also in Rowe's 1961, The Night Before Christmas, based on a Nikolai Gogol story. He does not play Santa Claus in this, in case anyone is curious.
For anybody wondering, is Father Frost Santa Claus? Well, no, but there's some significant aesthetic overlap.
Yeah. It's enough to where you sometimes see people describe Father Frost as the, quote, the Russian Santa Claus, which is incorrect, but they're kind of cut from the same cloth. You know, there are similarities. Once you get into the amorphous, collective unconscious, I guess you could make an argument that they're essentially the same being.
Both have long white beard, both ride around in a sleigh, both are associated with the winter months, both have a scepter that freezes people solid upon touching.
They both have a big beard, though, and sometimes they bring gifts.
Father Frost has the scepter, but Santa Claus has the flower to disappear, if you know.
Oh, well, yes, if you're watching Santa Claus, that was a 1960s movie as well, wasn't it? The Mexican Claus film?
Santa Claus versus the Devil.
All right, the rest of the cast. So you have Nastinka, the beautiful, perfect girl, the stepdaughter, played by Natalia Sedyuk, who was born in 1948, still alive as of this recording, a former Russian figure skater and ballet dancer. She was also in Rose, Fire, Water, and Brass Pipes. Hard to miss. She has just enormous eyes.
Right. So Nastika or Nastya corresponds to the good sister, the good daughter in the folktale, the one who's very nice and polite and is treated very harshly by her hateful stepmother.
Now, let's go ahead and talk about the bad sister, the stepsister here. This is Mafushka, the stepsister, played by Inna Churikova, born 1943. And I have to say, this was a performance that I always admired, knowing nothing about this actor. Like, she's tremendous in this. Like, just, you know, this snarling, but at times kind of vulnerable human being, you know, like she is an outrageous caricature, but at times you feel for her too.
Well, she's detestable, but also pitiable in the way that all spoiled children are, because, you know, like, there's nothing more revolting than a spoiled brat child, but you know that, you know, they were made that way, and you get to see how her mother's sort of abusive doting causes her to be the way she is. So you feel bad for her.
Yeah. And, you know, given how good this performance is, it probably shouldn't come as a surprise, but it might surprise some people to know that, okay, this was only her third screen role, but Churikova went on to have this just highly successful acting career in Russia and is highly acclaimed. Like, she's essentially the Russian Meryl Streep. Like, she's that level of successful. If you look up lists of like famous Russian actresses, unless it's, you know, some sort of just modern list that's not taking in the full scope of Russian cinema, you may very well find her on that list. She was born in 1943, still active today. She's married to acclaimed Russian director Gleb Panfilov, and has starred in several of his historical films, including 1983's Vasa. She's just wonderful in this. Every moment on screen, she's doing something interesting. Now, the character of Ivan, the male hero, was played by Edward Izotov, who was born in 1936, died in 2003. Tall, handsome Russian actor whose career lasted throughout the 60s and 70s, but was apparently derailed in the early 80s due to some manner of financial or real estate scandal. I couldn't get the full details on it. But he was also in Rose, Fire, Water, and Brass Pipes. All right, then there's the stepmom. This part was played by Vera Altskaya, who was born in 1919, died in 1978, another established Russian actor and a frequent cast member in Roe films. In her later career, apparently she found her niche playing just this exact sort of domineering mom, stepmom character. So apparently this is she had a later career based on this type of character.
Wicked stepmother for life.
Yes. All right, and then Baba Yaga, the witch. Oh, this is such a great character and such a great screen presence in this film. She is played by the actor Grigory Milyar, who lived 1903 through 1993. So this guy was a comedic Russian actor who also seems to have specialized in playing supernatural folkloric villains. He played Baba Yaga five times for Alexander Roe, and he played Kashke the Immortal something like four times. He also played Chudo Yudo. He played Tsar Goroko, various devils and demons. So if you needed somebody to play this kind of menacing but also slightly comedic villain, this was your guy.
He is giving it his all. I don't want to cheapen it by this comparison, but for like modern American audiences, think like a level of commitment to a frantic physical performance, sort of like Jim Carrey in the 90s.
Yeah, like in a sense, he's kind of like a big name monster player, you know, like a Boris Karloff. But imagine if Boris Karloff were merged with one of these just outlandish physical comedians. This is what you might have. All right, we also have an interesting bandit chief character who pops up in this, played by Anatoly Kubatsky, who lived 1908 through 2001, a Russian character actor who often played heavies and bandits and kings and frequently worked with Alexander Roe. He's pretty fun in this. It's not a huge part, but, you know, he has a lot of, snarling scenes where, he's staring off and off screen and looking very suspicious and greedy. So it's a fun role.
He has a great line that really sticks in my head where in the English dub, after Yvonne has like apparently magically thrown all of the bandits' clubs up in the sky so that they don't fall back down until months later, the bandit chief just says, "That's odd."
I love it. Yeah. All right, just one more name to mention, since we do tend to point out who did the music. It was an individual by the name of Nikolay Budashkin, who lived 1910 through 1988. I don't know much about him, but he also did the music on Through Fire, Water, and Brass Pipes. Yeah, I mean, the score is delightful in this. It's beautiful and magical.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today. Health Aid kombucha.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Now, I don't really remember this introduction from the Mystery Science Theater version. Maybe it's in there, but the movie kicks right off letting you know it's a fairy tale, because it begins with a grandmother sort of opening some, like the wooden windows, the wooden shutters of a playhouse, and she leans into the window and says, you know, once upon a time, an old man and an old woman lived in a village with their daughter. So it's like you're being told a fairy tale by your babushka, right, you know, before bed or something.
Yeah, yeah. No, this is a great opening. And apparently the exact same opening occurs in other Roe films with I don't know if it's the same grandmother type character, but a very similar storyteller saying, yes, this is a folktale. Let me tell it to you. And yeah, this was cut from the MST3K version, I'm sure for time, as they, you know, they frequently did with those films. But I also love it because if you remove her from the film, there aren't really any like nice old Russian ladies in the movie. You know, it's like yeah. Mostly the evil stepmom, a would-be mother-in-law who's also kind of scheming, and then a matchmaker who, I don't know, I guess the matchmaker isn't terrible, but still, she lacks the charm of this grandmotherly storyteller who's here to entertain us.
I think Yvonne's mom is nice. Oh, you only meet her for a second, but she like gives him good advice that he doesn't obey, though he should have.
Right, and she also, I mean, she's just like she's desperately like trying to tell him to live his life correctly as he's leaving the house. So I don't know. It's a very desperate scene and not really a warm one. I guess we do meet a nice blind lady later on, but nothing like the grandma here who's speaking directly to us.
No, but you got to give a shout out to Yvonne's mom. I mean, she's right about everything. He's like, I'm running off to cause trouble. I'm going to go rolling through the woods, getting into all kinds of mischief. And she's like, wait, respect your elders. If he'd only listened to her.
Yeah. She could have saved him a lot of grief, but isn't that always the way?
Well, anyway, so you get the introduction that she says, you know, she explains the situation, which is similar to the beginning of the original folktale about Grandfather Frost. You get the two daughters. Nastika was the daughter of the old man. Marfushka was the daughter of the old woman. And then you fade to these idyllic scenes of rural life. So you got sunrise on a river that's very smooth in an old house deep in the woods. And you see the family sleeping inside, or at least most of the family. Because the first character we get to see is Marfushka. Again, this is played by Inna Chorkova. She is sleeping in it. So there's a thing I was wondering about, whether this is a real feature of, I don't know, this time and place, something you would find in these rural Russian houses, or if this is saying something about the character. But she's like a teenager sleeping in what appears to be kind of a crib. Like it's like a wooden box, I think, that maybe rocks. And I wonder if that's supposed to be like, oh, she's spoiled like a baby.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I always thought it was just, yeah, she's kind of a big baby. So, of course, she's in something like a crib. But it's possible that this is some sort of traditional box bed. I know we have some Russian listeners and listeners with Russian roots or greater knowledge of Russian customs. Perhaps you can chime in on this. Is this something that an adult would actually be sleeping in? Or is this just about telling us that she's a big baby?
Well, I think something that has got to be true to the Russian setting is the fact that she is being bothered by mosquitoes. They're buzzing around her face. You know, I hear the mosquitoes can be really rough in the Russian woods, and so they're buzzing around. And her mother wakes up, and she sees what's going on. Oh no, my poor baby's being bothered by mosquitoes. So she wakes up her husband and makes him sit at Marfushka's bedside to wave a branch over her face to keep the mosquitoes away while she sleeps. And she also gives her a lollipop to enjoy while she's sleeping. Is that normal, or is that just a fairy tale thing? I don't know.
I mean, all babies would love to have a lollipop whilst sleeping, but you know, generally parents are not going to give it to them.
Gross.
But I don't know. I can't speak to that. But the interesting thing about the lollipop is that, again, the MST3K version of this, the video quality, certainly on versions that lasted after the show went away initially, the video quality is so poor that all I saw was red lollipop. It wasn't until I watched a nice HD version of it that I saw that the red lollipop is in the shape of a rooster.
Hmm.
And so I looked into this. I was like, well, why is it in the shape of a rooster? Is this a thing? And yes, it is indeed a thing. There is this. If something is in this film, I guess there's a very good chance that it's there for a reason. There's a whole history to this. According to the website Russia Beyond, Russian lollipops or ledenets date back to the 13th century. The rooster is the tradition. There are other molds that are used, other animals, but the rooster is the main one because the rooster is a, quote, magical and regal bird in Russian fairy tales. And by the 19th century, it was especially a big deal. So they're not always red in color. I think this might have to do with the use of beet sugar, or perhaps then using beet sugar and then beet juice to color it. But sometimes they're more of a brown color, and sometimes they're more caramel colored in nature. But they're still around. You can still buy them. You can order them online, and they're still sold in Russian candy shops.
Oh my God, what a good Christmas gift, getting somebody a bunch of Marfushka lollipops.
Yeah, I really, after I've learned this, it's like, oh man, now I want one. I don't know if I want to sleep with it, but you know, I want one.
You know, I've outgrown certain concerns about looking cool. There's something, you know, like dignity questions I don't really care about, but I will not eat the rooster lollipop. That's a line I will not cross.
Just in general or only at night?
Never.
What? Oh. Well, I'll have to get you one. You might change your mind.
Okay. But anyway, I think we're supposed to get the message. Okay, you know, they're giving her a lollipop while she's sleeping. So I guess Marfushka is a spoiled brat, even when asleep. But then, meanwhile, we get the mother going into the next room to see her stepdaughter, Nastya, who, again, corresponds to the good daughter from the folktale, the nice one. And Nastya is staying up through the night to knit a pair of stockings that her stepmother asked her to make for Marfushka. And when she comes in and finds her hard at work, the stepmother is still not satisfied. She's like, I told you to make the stockings, but I didn't tell you to click your needles like that. You'll wake up my darling girl. So Nastya is sent outside in the cold to finish knitting. And the stepmother is so mean, she says, the stockings have to be finished by the time the rooster crows. And she says, otherwise, my precious little girl, I will tear your braid off.
Mm.
There's a lot of threats of braid violence in this movie.
Yeah, the removal of braids. And then, of course, it's revealed that the stepsister does not have an actual braid. She has a store-bought braid.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, commentary on, you know, which daughter is legitimately beautiful and good and which one is artificially beautiful and good.
Mm.
Which, of course, is based entirely on hair length. We can't stress that enough.
Right, yes. Hair length directly corresponds to moral virtue. Yeah.
Yes.
But I noticed a little thing. This is also in keeping with the fairy tale, at least the version chronicled by Andrew Lang, which is that the family dog barks at the wicked stepmother when she's being mean to Nastya. So, like, the dog is taking Nastya's side, just like in the story, the dog takes the good daughter's side back at home. She's like, you know, I'll give you a pancake if you say that that the good daughter is bad and the bad daughter is good. And the dog's like, no, I won't.
Yeah, the dog is important in this movie, as are other animals. Like, they're not just hanging around. Like, they have agency, even if the movie didn't go to the degree of having them actually speak with, like, dubbed human voices.
Though some of the animals in the movie do speak, yeah. Like,
do they speak? I was trying to remember just now. I was like, does the pig speak? Does the cat speak?
The rooster speaks. You remember that?
Oh, yes, that's right.
That's coming right up. So the sun's about to rise, and a rooster hops up into frame. Remember, the stepmother was like, okay, if you don't finish these stockings, by the time the rooster crows, I'm going to tear your braid off. Mm-hmm. And then Nastya goes and negotiates with the rooster. She's like, give me a little time, please, pretty rooster. I guess she's flattering him. She's not probably not flattering, because she's good and honest. So she just genuinely thinks the rooster is pretty and throws mm-hmm. that in there just to be nice. And the rooster, actually talking with a human voice, says, sorry, roosters only obey the sun, so you'll have to go, you got to talk to my boss. You got to go deal with the rosy fingered Dawn. So she goes to plead with rosy fingered Dawn, and she goes up on this hillside with these trees behind her, and it's like this little crest of grassy hill that rises up by the river, and she faces the sun and pleads with it. And apparently the sun is so moved by pity for her, it sinks back down over the horizon and gives her time to finish the stockings. And I guess I think this was the first moment in the movie where I was like, huh, like, so far it's been interesting and funny, but this scene is actually quite beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. And I have to admit, when we recorded our current, I guess it's a current series on time travel fiction, I kept thinking of this. Like, this in some ways is kind of a folkloric time travel into the past, the literal turning back of the clock, but not the clock on the wall, but the clock, the celestial clock, the great celestial clock of the actual movement of the sun.
It's like Joshua stilling the sun in the sky so he could finish his battle.
Yeah.
And it works. So it works. She has time to finish the stockings before the rooster crows. But you know what? The wicked stepmother is just still not impressed. She comes out and she's like, so you did it on time. Why, you wicked little viper, you wicked little witch. I'll give you much harder work next time. You know, which is a relatable dynamic to a lot of people, maybe. I'm sure at some point in your life, everybody, you might have had the experience of trying really hard, you know, working hard to complete some task that seemed impossible, only to discover that doing so is maybe not really rewarded or appreciated, and instead makes people expect even more of you in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's more often a work thing than a family thing. I don't know.
Well, I've encountered shades of it when in Dungeons and Dragons, like when the dungeon master gives you an encounter and things go a little bit too easy.
Yeah, they just sort of like ad hoc make up another one to punish you.
Yeah, or like next time I'll have to make it harder.
Yeah,
like it's okay that it went. That sometimes we need a cakewalk. Sometimes we need a win.
Natural 20? Why, you wicked little vipers.
Yes, exactly. But as a reward, of course, yeah, she's going to get more chores, stuff like watering random stumps and so forth.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So she's sent off with this big list of other chores to do around the farm. And then we cut to meeting one of our other main characters. I guess our two main characters are Nastya and then this new character, Yvonne. Mm-hmm. And we see him coming out of his house. We learn he's from another village nearby. And immediately we get the vibe about Yvonne that he is young and strong, but proud and vain. And so he walks out of his house sort of, you know, chest puffed out, looking into a handheld mirror and just really enjoying himself, enjoying his own reflection.
Yeah.
And like we were talking about a minute ago, we see his mother comes out behind him and she really worries for him as he's leaving the house. She implores him not to forget her. So it's as if he's just going off to maybe never return. Who knows? And she tells him that he should not harm the weak and that he should respect his elders.
Yeah. And he is a caricature of arrogance and beauty. But also, I mean, the thing about Yvonne, and again, it's my understanding that there are sort of different versions of Yvonne that you encounter in the stories. Like he has all the tools to back it up. Like he is a beautiful man. He does have like almost godlike powers. He's like a Russian Hercules. And he has a great mind. He's able to trick people out of hurting him without necessarily getting into a physical battle with him, but he is just crushingly vain.
Right. I mean, I think it picks up on a folktale theme that I find interesting. Many folktales concern characters who are themselves vulnerable to some more powerful threat within the story, a monster or a bear, an animal, a bandit or something. But there's another type of folktale that is about the reckless arrogance of the strong young man. It's not that he's vulnerable. It's that his strength and his freedom make him a danger to himself and others.
Right, right. And he can't, even though he has all the tools to be a true hero, he's not going to be one until he learns like the right path in life and actually starts acting on the true values of moral life.
But as soon as we see Yvonne setting out from his house to go on his wanderings, a song and dance scene begins. And I also don't know if I remember this song and dance scene from the Mystery Science Theater, but I loved it. It's sort of like Yvonne's WWE entrance music.
Yeah.
The song is not translated in the dub, so I truly don't know what they were singing about, but I'm guessing it's about how everybody, including Yvonne, thinks Yvonne is really great.
Yeah, it seems that way. And yeah, this is definitely a scene that was not in the MST3K cut. So it's kind of like this delightful bonus you get from watching it. You know, you get to watch all these scenes you've seen a million times transformed into something beautiful, and then occasionally all new scenes.
But this leads into Yvonne going singing and a tramping through the forests and the hills, and it's just a really excellent musical scene. The song is good. Again, it's not dubbed, so I don't know what it's about, but I assume once it's Yvonne by himself in the woods singing, it's just, you know, I'm awesome, I'm the best, I'm going to sing about myself. And then we go straight into the bandit scene, which I did remember from the other version. Mm-hmm. And the bandit scene is a classic. How would we describe this one? Do you want to take it?
Well, it's just this band of really, like watching this, it's easy to imagine that they're not even humans, but they're some sort of dwarves or trolls or something, or gnomes, because it's just a bunch of very rugged looking, mostly bearded men in mismatched garments sitting around a campfire. And they're plucking the petals off of daisies, and they're trying to decide. They're trying to use the daisies as a way to decide how they're gonna go about their day, chanting, "We will rob them. We won't rob them. We will eat them. We won't eat them," etc.
But the next one is, we will beat them. We will be beaten. So what happens if they pick we will be beaten? Do they just go get beaten?
I don't think I never really noticed that they were saying that part.
Yeah. And some of the bandits are like up in the trees as lookouts. So mm-hmm. I love the setup here. But of course, we're going to have a clash of the strong against the strong. Yvonne comes along whistling his theme song, still doing the tune of his entrance music. And the bandits come up to him and they say, "Hey, you're captured. Now we're going to rob you." I think that's literally a quote. And so he says, "All right, then rob me." And he drops his satchel, which I guess they would assume has his money in it. And they start fighting over his satchel. And in doing so, they drop their clubs. And then Yvonne sets to grabbing the clubs and chucking them way up in the air. And then when they figure out what's going on, they're like, "Hey, what'd you do with our clubs?" And he's like, "Well, I threw them up in the sky and they'll come down next winter." Okay.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, the bandits are fearsome, but not the smartest. And Yvonne is easily able to outsmart them without even really having to fight them.
And so moving along, Yvonne just goes about his business. And then the narrator comes in. I love that there are just a few moments where a narrator suddenly talks. There's not much narration in the movie, but every now and then you get like a sentence or two. And it's kind of jarring because it's like, whoa, where did that come from? Mm-hmm. But the narrator says, "How long did our young hero Yvonne wander over hill and dale? Frankly, we have no idea." And I was laughing when I saw that because I was like, who is we? Is this like the God speaking? Like, you know, in Genesis, let us make man in our own image. Anyway, so the narrator says, "The fact remains that Yvonne eventually reached far away in unknown lands." And here is where we get another classic scene. I think we talked about this scene a little bit in our mushroom foraging episode. But this is the chase scene between Yvonne and the old man mushroom, or grandfather mushroom. So Yvonne meets this old man who wears a hat that looks like a mushroom cap. And he keeps disappearing and reappearing. Mm-hmm. And Yvonne goes up to him and says, "Are you a sorcerer, granddaddy?" And he says, "I dabble in sorcery a little, but the truth is that I get bored." And what does that mean? Does he get bored? Well, Grandfather Mushroom wants Yvonne to play hide and seek with him. So they work out a deal. If Yvonne can catch Grandfather Mushroom, he will receive a well-bent bow and some straight arrows. But it is hard to catch Grandfather Mushroom because he has the power to disappear and teleport. So this does not really seem fair. Mm-hmm. So Yvonne loses, but because he admits to losing, the old man gives him the bow and arrows anyway. But in keeping with the themes of the original folktale, here's what. So Yvonne is not in the classic Grandfather Frost, at least the version chronicled by Andrew Lang. But the same rules apply. So he has met a magical old man in the woods. And he is not courteous to him. He forgets to say thank you for the bow, and he just sort of is like, "Okay, I'm going to go about my business." And the old man is like, "Hey, aren't you going to say thank you and bow to me? Bow your head." And Yvonne says, "Those who bow run the risk of losing their head. The bear will bow before you if you like, but not Yvonne." And ooh, this is bad news. So Grandfather Mushroom is like, "Then so be it. Things will come to pass as you say. The bear will bow before me down to the ground, but it is your back that will bend." So here we get again, always be polite to old magical people in the woods.
Mm-hmm. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
But eventually we got to have our two protagonists, our two plot lines collide, right? So so Yvonne comes across a carving on a rock that reads, find a feather in the fields and throw it to the winds. And if you follow that feather, you will find your destiny. So he has a somewhat aggressive way of finding a feather in the fields. He shoots a bird with an arrow and then picks a feather off of it. Throws it, it floats all over the place, and he follows it. And eventually it lands at a riverside where he finds Nastya. She is there drawing water from the river. She's got her loyal buddy dog at the side, and she's singing this melancholy song, and she is pouring water over a dead stump. And Yvonne sees her, falls in love at first sight, and he walks up to talk. She is, of course, hard at work watering the old stump. She says she's going to water it until flowers bloom out of it, something her stepmother told her to do. And Yvonne's like, that's crazy. She must be very mean to you. But Nastya does not complain. She's like, oh, no, it's fine. You know, I'll do it. So Yvonne, I don't think there's really any lead up to this. He's just like, hey, will you marry me? So he's being very smooth. And she is like, I do not think we would make a good couple. And he wants to know why, and she says, well, it's because you're a braggart and I am not. And I like that his response is, well, I'm not a braggart because I'm actually very good at everything. So he explains, how, I guess it's not bragging if it's true. So he says he's a good fighter, he's a good fisherman, he's a great dancer, and he's a great hunter. And then he decides to show off how good he is at hunting by pulling out his bow, and he says he's going to shoot a bear on the other side of the river. And Nastya greatly opposes this. She says, no, she has cubs, and she tries to stop him. So she calls out to her dog, who barks, and this scares the bears, and they run off. And then Nastya throws a bucket over Yvonne's head. And then when the bucket comes off, the movie kicks into high gear because, oops, here we get Grandfather Mushroom magic, and now Yvonne has a bear head. And he sounds like Zoidberg.
Yeah, I guess he does a bit. But yeah, it has this fabulous bear head that I think is actually well crafted. You know, I mean, within the context of the film and the times, you know, it looks kind of terrifying, but also kind of alive.
It's very creepy looking, also sometimes funny looking, and his voice has changed. He no longer just sounds like Yvonne. He's like, whoa, what has happened to me? And when he realizes he has a bear head, he thinks that Nastya did it to him. He thinks that she gave, doesn't he? I think he thinks she gave him the bear head.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, because he starts saying, I curse you forever, you witch! And he runs off and is freaking out. This also looks very funny because he's just running between the trees, sort of swinging his arms around and moaning. And Nastya is very sad and her tears fall in the river. And for some reason, this makes flowers bloom out of the dead stump that she was watering.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this is where we also have just a very beautiful, lengthy scene that I think was cut from the MST version, where we just see this wonderful reflection in the water. And, you know, she's having this emotional moment. And it's again, one of those where you just admire the look of the film.
Oh, yeah, you're very right. I mean, so it is genuinely a sort of sad moment here. But then it cuts back to being kind of funny because then we see Yvonne just like roaming all over the place, growling and moaning and feeling really sorry for himself. And he somehow gets back to Grandfather Mushroom and he's like, I got to know how to get this head, you know, bear head off of me. He begs him to teach him what he can do to become a man again. And Grandfather Mushroom says, you've never done a good deed. And then Bearhead Yvonne just runs with it. So he's like, so I must do a good deed and then I'll return to normal. And Grandfather Mushroom is trying to protest. He's like, no, it isn't that simple. But Bearhead is he's already running off to get it done. And so it's still that youthful, sort of prideful foolhardiness. He's not going to even read the full instructions.
Yeah, and from here we get kind of a montage of scenes, right, where he's running up to people, random folks, and just like saying, "What can I do to help you?" But he's a bear monster, so he's terrifying people, and they're just running away from him.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like Frankenstein, right? Mary Shelley. Yeah. You know, the creature just wants friends, but he's scary looking, so people are going to run away.
Oh, it is very. In fact, it mirrors Frankenstein in another way that we'll get to in a second.
Now, cutting back to the house where Nastya and Marfushka live, there is a really funny scene leading up to, I guess it's supposed to be a matchmaking scene where a suitor and his parents come to the house and they're trying to set up Marfushka with this marriageable bachelor. And so they're getting her ready for that, putting all this makeup on her, but it looks like clown makeup. And she's wearing this extremely colorful outfit with a red and yellow crown, and the colors look great. And again, this is one reason that it really is worth watching the good HD version. But also I thought the scene is very funny because like the bachelor is this super dopey looking dude. He slightly has a bit of the energy of the guy who plays Mycroft Holmes in the BBC version of Sherlock.
Oh, yeah.
But like dopier with long flat hair.
Yes.
And so there's a scene. The parents are trying to get him and his parents to agree to marry Marfushka. But everything really goes wrong. Somehow she ends up falling into the lake and then her fake braid comes off. And it just all goes to hell, and the other people are making fun of her, and so the stepmother is really mad, and then the worst thing of all is that the suitor dude is like, hey, what if I married Nastya instead? Oh. And that just makes the stepmother go like ballistic. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then eventually after a long interlude, Yvonne does get his original head back, and I think it's because he picks up a stick thinking it belonged to an old woman that he helped carry back to her home over a mountain. And he's like, oh, this is her stick. I better take it back to her. And for some reason, that's the thing that does it. Then Grandfather Mushroom's like, okay, you deserve a human head now.
Yeah, an old blind woman. So it kind of mirrors Frankenstein in that respect that he ends up initially. He ends up helping her by carrying her home. But it's seeing her stick and thinking, oh, she needs that stick. I need to get that back to her. So it's almost like, I mean, this is something that the MST3K riff had fun with, you know, the idea that it's like he didn't actually do anything nice. He just thought about doing something nice.
Right.
And that was enough. But if I'm going to read into it more, I feel like it's the idea that he was doing it without any kind of a scheme behind it. You know, he wasn't helping her because it would help him. He was just doing it as a reflex. You know, it's like kindness was no longer something that he had to force himself to do. He could do it instinctually.
Oh, well, that makes more sense. Okay, I can accept that. But yeah, when it does come down to it, it is very funny to point out that he just thought about doing it and he gets rewarded for it. And
I don't know. I think sometimes people do sort of work that way. Like they maybe congratulate themselves a little too much, not for actually doing anything good, but for becoming convinced that they would do something good if given the opportunity.
Yeah, I think we've looked at some studies on that the core Stuff to Blow Your Mind episodes.
Okay, well, here sort of we hit the transition point because we skip ahead in time. So we skip ahead to winter. Previously, I don't know, I guess this was supposed to be in summer before. And now we go to winter, and here is where we sort of really get into the meat of the original folktale. I also think at this point we might skip over some things and describe in less detail, but there is so much wonderful stuff and magical characters in the second half of the movie too, because here's where we're going to get Baba Yaga and Grandfather Frost. So the second part begins with the premise of the Grandfather Frost story, which is that the old man is taking Nastya out into the frozen woods to die, because presumably because suitors keep wanting to marry her instead of Marfushka, and stepmother is tired of this, so she's like, old man, you will kill your daughter for me. And he's really broken up about it, but he's doing it, like he's taking her out there on the sled. But then he, while he's out there, he's like, no, I won't. And he tries to turn the sled around to take her back home. But like we talked about earlier, Nastya apparently doesn't want to cause trouble for her father. So she just hops out of the sled.
Yeah.
So I guess so as not to be a burden.
Yeah. She's just like, it's all right, Dad. I'll just die of exposure. I don't want you to have a rough afternoon.
I'll say again, that is pathological kindness, that there is no reason to be that nice. But now also in the same time period, in the dead of winter, we find Yvonne out wandering the woods, and what he's trying to find Nastya again. He's like, hey, I've got a human head again. I'm a better man. I'm not so selfish and vain. Now I am a more suitable bachelor who could marry Nastya, because now she'll see I'm actually a good person. So he's out trying to find her, and he comes across the cabin of the witch of Baba Yaga, which is up on legs, I think, as it is often depicted in these stories. And there's this great scene where he and the witch are both trying to order the house which direction to face.
Yep. That's a wonderful scene.
And this whole sequence is just great with all the costumes and the sets and everything. So yeah, she gets a bunch of trees to attack Yvonne and bring him inside because she wants to eat him. And she's going to load him into the oven to cook him. But he tricks her in classic fairy tale style. He's like, you want me to sit on the shovel so you can put me into the oven, but I've never sat on a shovel before. You got to show me how.
So, she's like, the youth of today were not taught anything. And she's going to demonstrate it.
So she gets on the shovel and he shoves her into the oven, and then she's like, ooh, get me out. So he lets her out. But then they're negotiating. He's trying to get her magical help to find Nastya.
The interior of Baba Yaga's hut is fabulous because it looks like Mario Bava was the interior decorator here.
Yes, blue and purple light everywhere, fog. It's full of animals. There are owls, pigs, cats, spider webs, I think some other snakes, other things I'm probably not even remembering. And then meanwhile, so while Yvonne is encountering this magical being, Nastya is encountering Grandfather Frost, and we get basically the same interaction that they have in the folktale. So he's like, are you warm? And she says, yes, even though she's obviously freezing. And he's like, you're a very nice girl. because she, she's not going to talk smack about how cold his forest is. And then he offers her his coat. But she's like, what about you? Won't you be cold? But of course he's Father Frost. He's not going to be cold.
The coat's just for show.
Exactly. This is a fashion coat. So just as she's about to freeze to death, Father Frost is like, oh, she needs help. So he covers her up in his warm coat, takes her away in his sleigh, and they go to his house, which looks kind of like a church.
Yeah. It's another beautiful structure inside and out. Inside, especially, it's just this blue crystal palace with, again, I'm kind of reminded of Mario Bava films, except it's as if Mario Bava made a fairy tale movie for children instead of some sort of a thriller.
Right. Well, there is something quite deadly within the house, though, because Father Frost, he leaves his scepter in there. And wouldn't you know it, Nastia's curiosity gets the better of her because she's like, what's the deal with this scepter? She goes to check it out, touches it, and it freezes her solid. She's in a chunk of ice. We learn from Father Frost that whoever touches the scepter will never wake again. And he comes back and finds her frozen like that, and he really beats himself up about it. He's like, yeah. You nitwit, you donkey, you didn't watch over her. Meanwhile, somehow the witch sends Yvonne off chasing after some kind of object. I think it's a sheepskin or something that will allegedly lead him to Nastia.
Or a pig sled? Or is this
The pig that
lives in her hut is transformed into a pig sled, a magical sled that will take him where he needs to go.
And when she's alone, she has these scenes with like a cat and an owl and a snake where she's just lamenting that she did not get to cannibalize Yvonne. She really wants to eat him.
Oh, and remember the cat was doing her bidding by helping to engineer the moment where she touches the scepter and is frozen.
That's right, yeah. But eventually Yvonne meets Nastia's loyal dog, her buddy dog from way back in the beginning. And the dog, I like this movie because this is a movie that appreciates the quality of a good dog. And the dog is a good friend. The dog leads him to Father Frost's house. And when he gets there, Yvonne's love wakes her up and defrosts her, basically. Oh, and then what is the exchange they have? It's like she gets defrosted and he's there with his head back to normal. And she says something like she gives him the diminutive form of his name, Ivanushka. She says, Ivanushka, how nice you are now. I like you better. And then he brags now that he does good deeds all the time. And she seems to accept this. And then we get sort of a happy ending, but the funny thing is the movie's not over yet. So you would expect that this is, the music kicks in and we go to credits, but it's not quite there yet. We do see the happy ending. Nastia and Yvonne arrive back at the family home in a regal sleigh. They're dressed like royalty with a box full of gems. So it seems like they're married and they're happy and they're rich. And Marfushka is furious. She keeps saying, I want stones. So much like the fairy tale, her mother demands that the old man take Marfushka out into the forest as well so that the same thing can happen to her. Because from their point of view, it's like, well, okay, daughter was left in the forest, came back married, happy, and rich. So, we just assume the same will happen to the other daughter. But when Father Frost comes across her, she basically beats him up. I think she actually hits him or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's abusive and awful to Frost. And in the original folklore, like, he freezes her to death for it. But in this, we get a sanitized version of that.
Right. So instead of him killing her and the stepmother, Marfushka is sent back home in not with a husband, or not like royalty, in a sleigh with a handsome husband pulled by white horses and a box full of jewels. Instead, she is by herself on a sled pulled by pigs with a box full of crows.
Yes.
And there's also a great sort of epilogue scene where Yvonne and Nastia are riding off together and they get attacked by the bandits from earlier in the movie at the behest of the witch.
Yeah, this is kind of our final battle. So she's rallied the bandits. And there's a great scene where she comes flying in her mortar, which is her traditional means of flying about. And this reminded me so much of an illustration from the Enchanted Worlds book. It was this really bright illustration by Ivan Bilibin from, I believe, 1900. It was in the book on witches and wizards, but you can also see this image if you just go to the Wikipedia page on Baba Yaga. It's like the top image, and it's really cool. So yeah, she's coming in. She's bribed the bandits. She's organizing them. So yeah, now you have the worst thing. You have you have Baba Yaga committed to bringing down Yvonne and Nastinka, and she has convinced all of these bandits to work with her. The bandits aren't very smart, but now they have a general telling them what to do.
Right. And I think she still wants to eat Yvonne, right? Like, she's like, he looked so tasty.
Yeah. She feels cheated out of that meal. So she's going to get it.
Right. So, so the bandits attack, Nastia gets tied up. The bandits are beating up Yvonne. But then we get, to save the day, we get a couple things. First of all, the loyal dog, unties Nastia from the tree. And then the bandits are knocked out by their own clubs. We get a call back from earlier when Yvonne threw all the clubs up in the air.
Yeah, I believe the riff in the MST3K version is "It's raining cinematic payoff," which I love that riff, and I think about it anytime something like this happens in a movie.
And then I guess we get the epilogue to the epilogue, which is like we see are Nastya and Yvonne at their wedding here or at some kind of celebration. Mm-hmm. They're in a house with a bunch of people gathered for a feast, and it's like the most colorful scene I have ever witnessed. The colors are just like violent.
Yes, it is absolutely beautiful. Just Fabergé egg, pastel explosions. It's gorgeous. And there on the table, you see bowls of food, apples. There's a rooster bowl. Everybody's here. And it's a great shot, too, because we begin at their end of the table, and then we pull back. We're moving down the table, down this feast table. We feel like we're a part of the feast.
Right. Yeah. So you know what? This is a wonderful holiday film. This is it does make for great comedic fodder on MST, but this is also just a really gorgeous, creative and fun movie. I give it 10 out of 10 talking roosters.
Yeah. Like most of the best MST3K films, it stands on its own without the riff. The riff is not necessary to enjoy it. In my opinion. So I recommend everybody consider giving it a go, especially if you're a fan of the episode. You'll still love it. You've probably seen the riffed version enough that you've memorized all the good riffs, so you can just think them or say them out loud while you're watching.
Pretend they're yours.
Yeah, pretend they're yours. Lucky for you, you can buy or rent this digitally on a number of platforms, including Amazon Prime, where I think there are like two different versions of it. I'm not sure about the quality on those, but whatever you end up finding, go with the high quality. If you find, make sure it's the vibrant colors. Shop around. You can watch it in Russian with subtitles. You can also watch it again with this very fun English dub. There's also a physical Ruskiko DVD that you can pick up for a quite reasonable price online if you want a physical disc to put into your DVD player.
Nice.
So I think this was our second Russian film on Weird House Cinema. There was Teens in the Universe.
Oh, yeah, the sci-fi one with the great robots.
Mm-hmm. Also, ultimately, a children's film. And here we are with another Russian children's film.
Well, I'm to understand there's plenty more where that came from. It seems like especially maybe the 60s and 70s have a lot of great great-looking fantasy and sci-fi films from Russia.
Yeah. And we've heard from some listeners who've given us some recommendations that also look great. And I've also run across some older films that also look pretty good. There's a particular Russian horror film that is on my list that we may have to get to in the months ahead. Or rather in the year ahead, because like we said, I believe this is going to be it for this year. We're going to have a couple of repeats in the weeks ahead, a couple of Weird House Cinema Rewind episodes, but then we'll be back with something new.
Christmas with the Cranks.
Yeah, in January, as it should be. All right. If you want to listen to other episodes of Weird House Cinema, you'll find it every Friday in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed. We are primarily a science and culture podcast with core episodes on Tuesdays and Thursdays, but on Mondays, we do listener mail. On Wednesdays, we do a short form artifact episode. And on Fridays, we set aside most serious matters and we just talk about a weird and interesting film.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring, and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.